Good evening and welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. It must be 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening as I look around this vast studio. We have a visitor tonight, my esteemed partner, Adam Sunhalter. God, Adam, 16 years of business coaching. We are business coaches by daytime in a company called Maximum Value Partners. And when I say business coaches, it's companies from 1 to 25, in the industry, makes no difference. We can probably help you if you listen to us, because we know the answers before we even start. We can walk in and all of a sudden see your issues. And it's not so much that we don't know what to do. It's the issue of trying to get these business owners, you business owners out there, to kind of do the steps to make your company successful. And we define success as growing sustainable profits. That's what it's all about. That's what you're there for, even if you're a nonprofit. You got to do it. And that's just a word, nonprofit. But anyway, we have a lot of fun doing it. We're here every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And we've been doing this now, Adam, for 3 years and marching forward here. We have great aspirations here. We started from zero, and we're probably zero plus one half. But we're moving. We're moving steady but slow. Anyway, Adam, why don't you pick up our guest tonight and let us know all about it. But tell people how they can be part of the program.
Yes, I will. Thanks, Jack. All right, welcome. This is Adam Sunhalter. As Jack said, we're co-hosts here on Dirty Secrets of Small Business. And if you want to be part of the show, you're always welcome, even when we have guests in. You can do that by giving us a call. It's usually the easiest way to do it. So if you give us a call at 440-946-9468. Scotty's sitting by on the board tonight. If you treat him nice, he might let you through. If you're not treating him nice, he'll send you your packing, right? So, but we're here, tonight's show, as you guys know, each month we have a graduate from the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program. We've got a guest here in studio, Ned Parks, who we're going to introduce and welcome to the show here, and he's with Aegis 360 Consulting. And we had to have some discussions off the air with Ned because they aren't appropriate to be on the air, but we'll have some good discussions on the air with Ned, Ned as well. So, hey, Ned, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here this night.
Hey, thanks.
Evening.
I appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
It's good. And for those of you listening for the first time, you know, as Jack said, we've been doing this for 3+ years, but you know, Ned goes back 20+ years ago and had his own radio show. So Ned's a professional at this. So he'll be teaching us some stuff along the way, and we'll be doing some good stuff. But Ned's been involved in a lot of entrepreneurial stuff over the years, and we always find a good way to kind of start the show to help our audience get to know you a little bit. Just kind of give a little background story, kind of where you grew up, what you did in your early years. I know you've had some early entrepreneurial experience as well, but just kind of get into your story here a little bit. We'll let everybody get to know you here for a few minutes, Ned.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Akron, Ohio, in an entrepreneurial family. My mother, back long before the days of a working mom in the early 60s, was a real estate agent, and she was extremely successful. My dad ran several small businesses, and then he was a real estate appraiser. And all three of us, my sisters and I, my middle sister still runs her own business, and I run mine. But early on, and I think I was 8 or 9 or 10 years old, I had the Ned Parks Detective Agency, and it was 25 cents an hour. I actually found the sign when I was cleaning up the garage in my parents' house. I've got a picture of it. I still have the sign, so I was always wanting to be in business for myself, and here I am.
So the detective agency, I think I may mention, one of my favorite books growing up was Encyclopedia Brown. I absolutely loved that stuff. So yeah. Being able to figure stuff out and always trying to solve the problems, right? So,
right.
Before that, you were an esteemed helicopter pilot.
Yeah, so
that's a good story.
I went into the United States Army and went through helicopter flight school and flew in the Army for 10 years total, 6 years active duty.
You have to be an officer, too.
Yeah, I was a warrant officer, exactly, mm-hmm. and then 4 years in a reserve unit. And then I wound up in the aviation business after that, ran four of my own aviation operations, and then went to work for a manufacturing company as a manager of their aviation subdivision, and then started my consulting company, which I now have back in 2000. So coming up on 20 years in this business October 1st.
Can you still fly helicopters?
I do. I was just flying a helicopter Sunday, in fact. I still have my flight instructor ratings in both helicopters and airplanes. And Sunday morning, I was given a couple of small lessons in airplanes, and then I went and gave a lesson in a helicopter in the afternoon. So I don't play golf, so I figure I better do something with my
weekends.
Good
for you. That's a good one.
It's probably a little more exciting way to spend your weekends than on the golf course, I gotta believe, right?
Much.
Especially if you're not good at golf, right, Jack?
Oh, boy, tell me about it. I quit golf cold, like cold turkey.
That's a good thing to do with golf.
About six or eight, I cleaned out a locker. I was belonged to a club, cleaned out my locker, and didn't even say goodbye to anybody. I just quit. And it was the best way. I determined totally I was never going to be good at it, so I could find other uses.
Right.
Even take a nap. I mean, you know, that's more productive than my golf days. But some people love it and do it.
Right.
It's a good game, but it's not for me, unfortunately.
Right. It's like a tumbleweed's blowing through. What happened to Jack? I don't know. He just disappeared one day, right? Up and disappeared.
It's the first robbery at the club. No. He just quit.
He didn't tell anybody. That's all right. So you mentioned having your parents kind of being more entrepreneurish, I guess, in your early stage. You know, and we're always curious, and we talked to the folks, and entrepreneurs come in all different shapes and sizes. Some have had that. And, you know, growing up for me, I had parents that were involved in entrepreneurial stuff. Jack's parents weren't, but, again, we're both here doing that kind of stuff. But I'm curious from your standpoint, as you reflect back upon it, you know, what kind of impact do you think having, to your point, first of all, not only both entrepreneurs, but also having two working parents at the time that it wasn't necessarily a normal thing. If you look back and see, you know, what kind of impact do you think that had on you in terms of what you've been able to do now in your career?
That's a great question. I think it had a huge impact. I think that probably the two to three things I learned, my mother being a real estate agent long before the days of any kind of voicemail or any kind of email or any kind of cell phone, when someone would call the house, and of course in those days all real estate agents had their office line and their house line because that's all they had. And let me tell you, if you didn't take the message and take it correctly and get it to her right away, you cannot believe the kind of hell there was to pay.
And I'm picturing wooden spoons. Oh, wait, no.
Oh, yeah. It was bad news.
Belts.
And it was interesting because it was both the only way to make connections with your clients, but according to my parents, it was absolutely rude not to pass on a message, and manners and being professional and businesslike were absolutely essential. And my dad, so I learned that from my mom. That was probably the biggest single thing. And of course, integrity, just do the right thing and you'll always come out okay. Dad had that. Plus, his big thing was, business shouldn't be difficult, so why do we make it difficult? And he said, contracts are there so we don't forget not to keep a dishonest person honest. And if you think you're going to do business with a dishonest person, don't bother because it's going to be a waste of your time no matter what the contract.
That's great advice.
And it was advice. And I've carried that forward too. So those were kind of two things for my parents that, you know, dig on it. You call, you make return phone calls, you get back on email. And sometimes it'll slip with me. And I'll tell you, when it does, it just drives me crazy for a week. And I just beat myself up terrible for a week. I hate doing it.
Yeah. So... In spite of that entrepreneurial experience early on, you still decided to go into a couple of non-entrepreneurial, if I call our U.S. Army non-entrepreneurial, I guess there are entrepreneurial things that happen there, but it's a pretty regimented structured program, and then getting into kind of a bigger corporation, right?
Right.
And so you had, you know, for the first part of your career, kind of get exposed to some big stuff.
Absolutely.
And then you just decided to leave one day and, you know, talk about that kind of transformation in terms of...
Yeah, so from the time I was a little boy, I knew I wanted to fly. Aviation has been a part of the Parks family going back to the 30s, actually. And so there wasn't any question I was going to fly. It just was a question of how and where and for whom and why and so on and so forth. And I just said, I want to be a military pilot. So I just, you know, worked to that goal, and I got there. And then for a variety of reasons, came off active duty, went in the reserve unit, and then instantly started into my own business. Ran those for a while and then sold them off and got courted by this manufacturing company. They were a manufacturing company, had nothing to do with aviation, but then they had an aviation subsidiary that they kept the corporate airplane in and also a full retail, open to the public kind of flight school and maintenance and fuel and so on and so forth. And they needed a new manager, and I went there, and that exposed me much more to the learning and development in a corporate setting. And in the Army, I was an instructor pilot and a classroom instructor, so I loved that piece of it, and I didn't know how much I liked it, but I just loved it. And then in the corporate side, I learned that piece of it, and I said, you know, I want to live here. You know, this is what I want to do. And a very forward-looking company that actually helped me make a transition to my own business, and you know, I'm still friends with them today, and in fact, I was just talking to the old VP of HR on the phone not long ago. He lives down south now, and he's still doing some work, and we were chit-chatting and sharing some things. So, you know, I think that's the other thing, Adam, is is making friends wherever you go and networking like a wild person. And if you can't make a friend, then just end the relationship amicably and move on. We're all big kids. There's no sense of burning a bridge and making an enemy. I just, why?
Right.
You know, just why? So the transition was I had that pull back to be my own boss again. And the company I was working for, probably the best company on the planet, I felt like I was my own boss. In fact, the owner taught me a term that I've never forgotten. He said, I don't hire employees, I hire intrapreneurs.
Intrapreneurs. Okay.
And he said, Ned, this is your division. I want you to run it. Every single month we met for lunch and went over the P&L, the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement.
Excellent.
Every all month. Right. And I had full responsibility on all three of those. And we would talk about what went wrong, what went right, how do we change it, what do we do, decisions to make, everything. And he really wanted entrepreneurs to run the different departments of his business. And his business has been wildly successful
to this day. That's a great testament to culture today. Everyone is focused. Seriously, when I was much younger coming out of college, you know, the top management at the time always talked about employees are our best assets, but they never did a damn thing for them.
Right.
And now
they talked about them, Jack. Does that count?
Now it's altogether different. You know, they're opening up
and
inclusion is great. There's just the whole attitude towards making employees better.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
The good ones want to get better.
They
so
do
how do they
get
do
better.
It other than college? Which
And you know, Jack, it's interesting because this isn't something new. I mean, even George Patton, you know, a very autocratic, screaming, kind of fist-pounding leader, was a guy that said, give people a job to do and then get the hell out of their way.
Absolutely.
He understood
that.
I don't care how autocratic he was. He totally understood that. And he did get out of their way. And Eisenhower did the same thing. You know, I mean, all these guys that have always understood they can't do it alone. So get the right people in there, get smart people around you, and then shut up and get out of their way.
That's right. Give them the information, bring them in. And absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. I could see your company, what you just described, and how they would be successful.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. So in between getting out of the Army, you started your own stuff. That's what you sold. So what was the business that you started coming out?
So coming right out of the Army, I had Parks Aviation.
Okay.
And we were what's known in the industry as a fixed-base operation, what you might know as a service for general aviation aircraft. So we sold fuel to an aircraft would fly in. They have to buy fuel. We had the fuel concession. We sold them fuel. If they needed to rent a car, we would rent them a car. If they needed hotel rooms, we would help them with that. We had a flight school so we could teach people how to fly. We had mechanics that worked for us and would repair airplanes. We had hangar space that we would rent airplanes for people that owned their own airplane and were based at our airfield.
Okay.
Grew into a charter operation, so we had several aircraft that we would charter out to companies and they would hire our airplane to take them to see their clients or do business and what they were doing. So we ran the whole gamut, and then I took the business and we started doing some very small aftermarket parts manufacturing on a very small scale. So that's what we did. It was a blast.
Okay. And then the company you sold to, that's the one you were talking about that was really good.
Right.
So do you want to mention their name or
No. Well, that's fine.
We'll, okay.
Yeah. We're good.
So you had a chance to try your own thing. You got an offer you couldn't refuse, so they sold to them. But it sounded like that was a very good experience.
Actually, my company. I actually sold to a partner.
I'm sorry.
Misunderstood. Yeah, I actually sold to a business partner.
Okay.
They wanted it, and then I wanted to go work for this other organization.
Got
so
it.
I sold
okay.
my half.
I misunderstood. That's okay.
I apologize. Yeah.
That's okay. I'm good. I ask lots of questions.
I can straighten both you guys out.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's always good to ask those questions. Okay, so you sold to the partner, and then you went and joined that other company.
Yes,
okay.
I did.
Got
yep.
it. Okay. Another company, that's where you learned a lot of good stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's where I really learned, you know, to have what I call an enlightened mindset and to really understand that if you create the right conditions and you hire some smart people, they'll take care of it, you know, for you. And it's what I try to, you know, teach a lot of my clients now is, look, you know, your employees aren't going to do it the way you're going to do it. They might do it better, so get out of their way. In fact, one thing Goldman Sachs says is things will run better on Friday when you're not there. And they're right. You know, it's like, thank God he's gone or she's gone, right? That we can actually get something done around here.
Take the hint, right? Quit distracting me. Quit getting in the way.
Right.
Quit giving me new things to do that you're going to change your mind on in 2 days anyway, right?
Just get out of here.
Stop bothering me.
You know, I had a similar kind of a lesson. I I have somebody that works for me, and I turned over all the invoicing to her. That's one of her big jobs. And she was out for a couple of days, and a couple of invoices need to go out, and I thought I'd be helpful. So I screwed up the first invoice. Always. I sent it to the customer, right? They sent it back, said it's not right. So then I tried to fix it. I screwed it up again. She came back, and she looked at me, and she said, "Leave the invoicing alone." Yes, ma'am.
Get out of the way. Quit trying to help her. Go help somebody else, right? Because this isn't helping me at all, right?
I screwed it up so bad. The client was laughing about it. Thankfully, they're a really good client. They thought it was hysterical, you know, thankfully.
They know where you belong. That's right. I'm sure many of the folks that are listening or audience can understand that, because they often go in and try to help out, and they wind up getting in the way or shooting themselves in the foot or someplace that's a little more painful. All right. Well, if we get our first break here, we'll stick to it. We come back. I want Ned to talk about it. Okay, so he went, again, entrepreneur growing up, go to the Army, you know, go to his own thing, go back to a kind of bigger company. Then he decided to go back on his own again. I want to talk about what he went on his own for, and kind of give us a little bit of history of what he's been doing here with Aegis and kind of what he's been doing. We have some good discussions about what he's doing to train and some very, very key items in terms of the business. So stay tuned. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
I'm Jack Mancini. And to be part of the program, 440-946-9468.
All right, stick around. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And we're having our Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Alumni, and this is the week for that for the month of August. And we've got Ned Parks from Aegis 360 Consulting. And we kind of gave a little background, or Ned gave a little background on his history in the first segment. And as we're getting ready for this segment, he's talking about how he's, again, big corporation, you know, and I'll call the Army a big corporation, his own business, back to a kind of bigger company. Then eventually it got that entrepreneurial itch again to kind of scratch. And that's the genesis for Aegis starting almost 20 years ago now, mm-hmm. back in 2000. Yeah. But talk about how that kind of came back to being again, where all of a sudden you mentioned, I think, a key word in the first part about being an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. But just kind of give the people a sense how that happened, where all of a sudden, hey, yeah, it's cool working for somebody else, but man, I got to get out back on my own again.
Right. So it was interesting because working for that privately held company, they were so forward looking, and they would pull many of us in and give us instruction on how to facilitate, how to do internal consulting. So we would have a lot of vendors that would come in and consult to the organization and different departments and help with different issues and so on and so forth. But we also tried to do a lot of internal. So they would pull us in, and like I would go in and help the R&D section work through an issue because I wasn't anywhere near their chain of command at all. And so I began to learn that, and I liked it. And I liked it a lot. And then I was on the team that would hire a lot of the people to come in, and I'd look and I'd go, shoot fire, man.
I can do this.
I can do this.
Right.
And I had done it. I mean, I had done it in the Army and in the training command, and I had done it in my own companies. And I said, boy, I really like the freedom, and I like what that looks like. And the more I looked into it, I said, man, I want to go there. And so I said, I need a runway to get there. And I created one, and the company helped, and I created another of my own. And set myself up to say, okay, this is my runway. This will, you know, keep me financially sustained while I start this thing as a sole proprietor, no bank note. You know, I didn't have a product to sell. I didn't have any. And it's interesting when you start in a consulting business, you have no leverage. Your leverage is you. You know, if I start a car repair place, I can have four cars going on at the same time, and I can leverage the income and leverage the finances. But when it's you and you're your only inventory and time is your only inventory, you know, you're either getting the business when you're not making money, or you're doing the business and you're not getting any business. So, you know, it can be a real tough road to hoe, and I was not going to just spring out there and hire a bunch of people and see to compete with E&Y or one of these guys. You know, I was smart enough not to do that. So you have to set yourself up that you don't feel pressure. And Jack, that is something that I'm pretty passionate about in smaller businesses, but I think bigger businesses can run into this problem as well. I think we make really poor decisions when we're under financial pressure. Mm-hmm. really poor. And we sell, we take on a client we shouldn't take on. We sell it for a price we shouldn't sell it for.
Those early on mistakes,
you know. And so that was something I said, I know that that can happen. And I won't say that I didn't do some of it. I did. But I tried to set myself up to minimize that as much as I could. And I think that really helped. Because I had very few sleepless nights going, oh, my God, am I going to make money tomorrow? I knew I had money coming in. It was from some other runways I had created. But I really tried very hard. I said, I don't want to get into a pinch where I'm taking on business I shouldn't take on that I'll fail at, or with a client that doesn't fit my values and I'm just miserable working on it, or any of those sorts of things. And I think that's true for everybody. I mean, it can be true for the car repair place that, you know, they're looking for something and they've never worked on a diesel, and all of a sudden a guy comes in and they fix it, and then they have a disaster on their hands.
Right.
They go, God,
so,
I wish I had.
So often they just chase the money.
Yeah.
You know, we have in our coaching business, we have a 14-point criteria. And one of them is not to be financially stressed, because
right.
we don't win with
them. We don't want to do
you
that.
Know, they're,
yeah.
They're, yeah.
yeah.
And the culture, there's, yeah, again, 14 points.
Right.
If they get a passing grade, fine. We'll make a proposal. If they don't, we don't move forward.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, that is great. I love it.
No, it's funny. I was meeting with a banker earlier today, and I was talking about our seven keys that we focus on. I was kind of going through with her, and the sixth key is cash forecasting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 90-day by day, you know, to show what the cash balance is going to be.
Right.
Right. And so that's the one that kind of floats. She goes, what do you mean, floats? I go, well, so I gave a couple examples. So we had a client where all of a sudden the kids inherited the business, and they also inherited $250,000 in debt. I said, cash flow is pretty important at that point.
Right.
I said, none of the other seven keys matter. It's this one. If we don't get this thing fixed, you can't hear anything else, right?
Right.
And so the folks that are doing well and cash not a problem, all of a sudden they can focus on everything else, right? So you mentioned a term, given your aviation background, I understand, talking about, sure. in terms of multiple runways, you said,
yeah,
that you
yeah.
had set up.
Yeah.
So you know, just a point of clarity, what do you mean by you had multiple runways kind of set
so
up?
So I had a small repetitive speaking engagement that paid me a set amount a month,
okay.
Every single month.
So different lines of revenue.
Right, but this one was kind of out of the stream of the business itself. It was isolated. It was easy for me to do. It provided me a set amount of money, and it took care of the mortgage kind of thing.
Got it, okay.
Right? So I had that. And then for a little while, I went back into flying full-time on a very limited scale from a scheduling standpoint that allowed me. I actually flew for a couple of hospitals, and that job allows you a lot of downtime in between calls. So I was able to work on my business while I was waiting for a call. And then we had a ton of time off. I could schedule and count on the schedule. So I had these runways that, on a very personal level, got me going financially and allowed me to then say, you know, I don't want that piece of business.
Right.
And that, I got to tell you, even today, that's hard to say, I don't want that piece of business. For any of us that are small,
sure,
right, it's
sure.
very difficult to say that. But I'll tell you, when you get over that hump and you say it the first time, and you walk away from it, and you still feel good about it, the second time gets real easy.
Oh, yeah.
It gets real easy to say, nope, that's not my piece of business. Thank you anyway.
So in the modern vernacular, the runways would be a side hustle. Right?
Yes.
So like that, where it's also,
yes.
I got things kind of going on. I got a little bit of stuff coming here
right,
and there.
Right.
But, yeah, it's keep me to make sure I can focus on what I want to do from a big picture
correct.
Standpoint to get this business up and
right.
going.
Right? Right. Absolutely correct.
And yeah, that's a big thing. It's something we see. We'll notice that there's a natural ebb and flow of business, you know, as you said, as it goes up and down. It's very, you know, true of most service companies where it's the people are the product to a certain extent, right?
That's right.
There's that feast or famine thing.
Absolutely.
In terms of what kind of goes on. And, you know, it's one of the things we struggle with our clients is to get them to get away from them being the product per se, and then they have to get in a sales role, which is often where most people know, you know, hey, I didn't get this fancy degree or learn all this stuff in order to become a salesperson. It's like, well, when you sign up to be an owner of a business, guess what? You're by default
the best
right. You're absolutely
right. Right. Yeah. And it doesn't mean you can't get other people to do it eventually, but usually that's like, that's the last thing
right.
that they can give up, right? You can
right.
find other people that come in there that are good at doing whatever the product or service is. You can usually find some good folks from an administrative standpoint to handle some stuff. But to find the folks that are gonna sell, especially like you touched on, Ned, when it comes to a small business, people love to deal with the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in and of itself, and usually the owner tends to be very knowledgeable about the product and service. Obviously, they're totally bought in because it's their company. So they tend to sell pretty well.
Right.
And it's a matter of getting them out of their own way. You know, you mentioned about networking earlier in terms of, you know, network like crazy and meet people.
Right.
Yeah, it's a big part of what business is about. And it's, you know, the selling piece, it's not sales. It's just, it's helping people out. If you can help them out, that's great. If you can't, you kind of move on. And try something else. But it's key to have that, you know, to your point, you're trying to get the things down to where, hey, I can focus on what I'm trying to be able to do. And if cash flow is out of the way, it makes things much, much easier.
Much easier.
So how long did that take in terms of getting that the runways down? Was it a few months, a few years before you
It was interesting. I was telling Jack earlier that I had was we're trying to buy a building, so I'm putting together a little a package for the bank, and I was putting together just a history of the company and all the way back from the beginning. A bank doesn't want to see that much from a legal standpoint, but I wanted to give them a full history so they could get a sense of it. And I was looking at what we had done, and I would say that I got into a place at about year four that it was really comfortable. The side hustle was no longer any kind of a requirement. So it took about 4 years to get there. And again, keep in mind, I'm doing it all on my own. I didn't have anybody helping me. I was up late at night doing this. I was doing that. I was servicing the client during the day. But then year four, I was able to take a breath and go, okay, let me take a look and see what this thing looks like now.
Right. Okay. No, it's one of those things people often don't understand how it could take some time. You have to be patient. So that sounds, you have to be patient. And often, I think, as small business owners, most of us are not very patient. We want things, and that's probably why we like small businesses, we can make things happen quickly, right?
Right.
But it still does take some time, and you got to be balancing that short-term need for you know paying the bills, but also longer-term in terms of what we're trying to do. And to your point, if you get to that point where you're able to fire a customer, that's a great place to be. And I know there's many people listening today that you've thought about that and you've danced with that, but you've never actually gone through and firing them. So you gotta do it. It's a great feeling when you do it, because it's not the right fit, right? So anyway, up against our second break here. When we come back, we're gonna have our Goldman Sachs corner here, where we'll talk about your experience with the Goldman Sachs program a little bit, and then we'll kind of get that when we come back from break, and we'll have more stories to share as well. So stay tuned. I'm Adam Sunhalter,
and I'm Jack Mancini,
and we got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online WINTRadio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini. And if you want to be part of this program, 440-946-9468. You might have a question for Mr. Ned, and we'd like your butting in here. And if you butt in too far, we'll tell you to get off.
That's all right. And we're going to do right now, this is our Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business segment. We're going to talk to Ned Parks about of Aegis 360 Consulting about his experience with the Goldman Sachs program. We always like to start with, Ned, how the heck did you hear about this program? And when you did, what was going on in your world? You said, hey, it seemed like a good idea for me to take a day a week and just kind of, get away from the business and let everybody else kind of, again. So what made you think this was a great idea? And where were you when you
So shortly after Goldman came into the area, I ran into somebody that worked, and they're not there anymore, but I ran into a lady at that worked for them at a business networking event, and she told me about the program, and I said, that looks pretty interesting. So I dug into it a little deeper, and at the time, the business wasn't big enough from a sales standpoint. We were shy of that, and I was shy of the amount of employees. So I kind of put it on a back burner, but I kept one eyeball on the program at all times. And I had made a decision at that point in the business that I was going to do one thing every year to advance the business. There would be either a new certification or a new vendor or a client or a training or some sort of something that advanced me and the business all at the same time. And so I had put it out there. They said, okay, 1 year I will do Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
At some point that's going to happen. And then other few other years, and I put a timeline on my website of the different milestones that we've had and relationships that we've developed and so on and so forth. And finally got big enough, and so I went snooping back around and said, hey, guys, I'm here. What do you think? And they said, put an application in. So I put the application in. And for me, it was tough because I actually wanted to do it a year earlier, and I looked at the schedule, and I already had work booked on a lot of the days. And when I book work, that's it. The calendar is then bolted down.
All right, okay.
So I looked far enough ahead, and luckily they produced dates far enough ahead. I was able to block those dates out.
Okay.
And I said, all right, I can make every single date without any issue at all. And went through the process and got a notice in the mail and said, hey, you've been accepted. So
okay.
I was doing backflips. I was pretty stoked about
it. So that was a few years from when you became aware of it to when it actually kind of happened, right?
Okay. Yeah, a long time, in fact.
So is there you have a running list? You mentioned that one of your goals is to do something to move you ahead, move the business ahead every year.
Right,
so do you have like an ongoing list of things you keep track of? This got kind of thrown out, or it's a whiteboard somewhere you kind of throw things up with ideas and stuff?
Yeah, so 1 year I wrote a book and published it, and it's out, and that was a couple of years ago. I did Goldman Sachs.
What's the book? 1 year. What's the name of the book?
The name of the book is The Simple and Easy Manager, What Managers Need to Know Before They Need to Know It, is the name of the book. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you can find it there. I've got them in the office as well, but that's the primary place we sell it. So I wrote the book. I have identified, for instance, a company out of Sweden I wanted to do business with, and they produce tabletop business simulations. And I said, you know what, I liked it, I looked at it, and so I laid that down as a goal, and I said, next year I'm going to develop a relationship with them. And I have, and that's created a significant amount of new business and revenue. 1 year I decided I was going to pick up assessments, the DISC assessments that you're probably familiar with.
Oh, we love it. We use DISC for everybody. It's fantastic.
And so I said, okay, I'm going to bring that into the business, and that has produced a significant amount of new business and revenue. So every year it's been a relationship, or it's been something that I've done. So 1 year I went and got – I was working with clients, and they kept talking about green belt and black belt and Six Sigma, and I kind of knew it. I read on it, and I said, you know, if I'm going to – have a sane conversation with my clients, I'd better get there. So I said, okay, this year I'm going to get my green belt. I don't need my black belt because I don't do the work, but I said I'm going to get the green belt and lean practitioner. And I don't go and do that kind of, that's not the work that we provide, but I can certainly now, from a leadership perspective, I can weave into that way better than I ever could. So
sure.
The value that I bring to the client is way higher, even though I don't sell that service. We don't do lean projects. We don't do any black belt projects. That is so far out of our wheelhouse, it's not even funny. But there isn't anybody that can pull the wool over my eyes either.
Yeah, you understand it.
That's important. It. I understand the value of it.
Sure.
And oftentimes, it's as much a leadership issue as it is a technical issue. Trying to get people to change to those systems is a 100% leadership issue. And now that I understand the system, I can really assist the client in making that change. And now I know people that I say, you need to call John over here if you want somebody to do the project, because this guy did it for, 40 years at this big manufacturing company, and he knows it, and he's great with people. And so now I'm able to send people in because I really understand. So I did that 1 year. So it's always something to step away from the business, Adam, and say, I'm going to make myself and the business better.
Perfect. Okay. So it's done. And so make sure we hear that. This is done on purpose. It wasn't like this, you're thinking about it. You're making a choice, and you're tuning your station, putting your antenna up to say, I'm looking for these kind of opportunities.
Yes.
The ones you described so far, you said you had an idea. Here's what it's going to do. It's going to be an additional product or service,
right,
or I can relate better to my audience in terms of if I understand,
right,
or if I get my green belt, those kind of things. So looking at the Goldman program, what were you hoping to get out of the program? And then did it live up to what you were hoping for? Or did something else come out of that maybe you didn't expect to come out
right
of it?
So it was interesting. A lot of my cohort alumni and friends said, I don't know why you're here. This is what you do for a living. You know this as good as they do. And I said, well, first of all, that's like the cobbler kid never has any shoes, right? So, yeah, I can walk my way through it. The finance piece was probably the most boring of all, because I'm pretty strong in finance because of working for the guy I worked for, and he drilled it into me. So that part wasn't as eye-opening. But here's first of all, I'm one of these people that I learn by interacting with others. And I learned so much from understanding a business that's absolutely nothing like mine, that it's not even funny.
Well, the commonality.
The commonalities and what's there and so on and so forth. And just raising your business acumen will increase your ability to run your own business. I tell all of my clients that want to raise their business acumen, they must watch two TV shows religiously. One is Shark Tank and one is A Profit. And I said, when you watch those two shows, your business acumen will go up from two different perspectives, one operationally, one investing, and you need to know them both.
Very good point.
And that is their homework. And I've got a couple of clients that have now turned that into lunch and learns. They actually watch episodes, and the senior leadership team get together and then discuss them like a book, almost like a book club. So that was the thing for me.
That's a great idea.
It really is. It's religious for in our house. I mean, my daughter is like, Dad, if you watch it without me, you're dead. You know, I mean, we just.
You what you'd watch again with me.
Peel the business model apart. I mean, we just have a blast. You know, talk about nerding out. Holy criminy. So now we do it with the Jamesons, but that's another conversation. The other thing that Goldman did for me was just I'm a highly social person, and I love other businesses, and I love to see what people are doing. And I was able to create, first of all, some incredibly good friendships, which – you know, if it never brings me a dollar, I don't care. I've made some phenomenal friends in that program that, you know, I can pick up the phone and say, man, I'm frustrated over a client. I just need somebody else to listen to me. And it's great to have somebody who knows nothing about my business listen to me about a problem I'm having and give me a perspective, and they're not suffering from the forest for the trees. And as consultants, we all know that's the value we really bring. Yeah, we bring some technical expertise, but I can walk into your business and I can see things you never see because you look at it every single solitary day.
That's probably
the largest value. So I want that back the other way. And so that's what it's brought for me is my unofficial business advisor group that's we don't meet on a regular basis. Although we've actually done some of that. I've partnered with another alumni and we did a business strategy retreat and we worked on their business, and they're in a totally different line of business than I am for half the retreat. And they worked on mine for the other half. And we had some great dinners and we sat and looked at Lake Erie. And you know, when you're in a small business, you don't get that opportunity very often. And I think it's really important to hit the brakes and get the heck away from your business and talk about your business and just sit back and work a whiteboard and do it with some fresh eyes. And Goldman Sachs has allowed me to develop those relationships. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Right. Well, it's good. You mentioned you kind of getting out. I think you joked earlier about that. Hey, when you're gone on Friday, it's gonna run better, right? And a lot of people, it's just the fact that it's running at all. The fact that it's still there. You know, you can go back on Saturday, go back on Monday. It's still there, right? Because a lot of folks maybe don't believe it, you know, I think coming in. They're thinking, yeah, maybe, but until they see it. So it's a big thing. Hey, go away. It's okay. And you get a chance to test your people. Right. And I was actually talking to one of the new graduates last week, and she mentioned she was gone for the class, and her partner was gone too. And she said, I thought things we had covered. I was like, oh, this is good that we're both gone. Because now I'm learning that things I thought were okay aren't okay. I said, okay, well, just again, you're always kind of learning. There's always a positive kind of takeoff stuff. All right, so it sounds like they're very, very good job from that standpoint. Is there anything, again, that maybe they could have done differently or better? You say, hey, gee, I wish they've done this better as part of the class, or maybe, you know, post-class? Anything that jumps out at you there?
Yeah, you know, the class itself, I really have very little that I think they could have done better. It's tweaks and maybe some of its style or just personal preference. So I really don't have anything there. Where I think it's lacking a little bit is on the alumni side. You know, some of that is the alumni is not willing to be a part of some of the events. And the other part is I think that needs to be bolstered. And so our cohort, I'm pretty proud of. I was in cohort 13, and we were just a really strong cohort. I mean, really, we bonded incredibly fast. And we've stayed together pretty tight. And then there's a core group of us that if we're not together face-to-face, we know what's going on in everybody. You know, a guy sold his business, we all knew, sent out an email. He said, if you ever need to sell your business, I learned a lot. You know, I'll help you walk through that and give you some good sage advice kind of thing. And we get together for drinks every once in a while. We get together for breakfast. We kind of have a round robin. What's going on? What are you doing? So we've just, our cohort just said, we're just going to do that. The cohort behind me did the same thing. They've got a very strong core group. I know most of those folks, and I get together with them occasionally. But that, to me, is an area that the whole program, alumni as well as the program itself, could really bolster. I think we'd all benefit if we bolstered it up.
Okay. And being typical entrepreneurs, where they see a need, they just start to do it themselves, and say, hey, I wish you guys had done this, because it's one of those things. They kind of go into that 13 weeks not necessarily knowing.
Right.
And they get there and go, wait a minute, you know, I have to leave now? I mean, I didn't know I wanted it or I need it, and I've had it, and it's like, hey, I want more, but I want to just kind of stay connected to it. So your point, they made it more purposeful. Again, the program itself was very regimented. It's got things laid out. So to have it made a little more of that, let's make sure it happens on purpose versus leaving it to the entrepreneurs to do the entrepreneurial thing. So that's good. No, very, very good feedback. Great story and great testimony for that for the program, Ned. So I appreciate that. So that's Ned Parks and Aegis 360 Consulting, his experience with the Goldman Sachs program. We've got one more segment to go when we come back from our break here. And we're going to talk more about what the future holds and talk a little bit more in depth on some of the really neat things that Ned and his team are doing to help educate people on financials, which is one of our favorite parts, Jack, as well as some leadership stuff. So stay tuned for that. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
I want to understand how we wrote a book, how we found time and got the expertise to write a book. I'm Jack Mancini.
All right, stay tuned. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And we're joined tonight by Ned Parks of Aegis 360 Consulting, and he's been sharing his story with us. In the last segment, he shared his experience with the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program. And we want to talk a little more about what he's doing with Aegis 360 Consulting, because it does a lot of things in terms of educating people financially. And you talked about it a little bit before. We're off there, we mentioned like apples and oranges. There's a way you teach people how the money flows in the business. And talk about that, because a lot of the stuff you do, Ned, is not just for small business, also for some bigger companies. I think people assume that folks, if they have a degree or this degree or that, they just kind of know this stuff, right? But your experience shows very, very differently in terms of how you guys put this thing together. It's relatively simple, but it's very, very, very powerful to help people understand their numbers, how things kind of flow throughout things.
So, it's interesting. in the Army, 90% of your training is simulation-based or scenario-based. They're slightly different in the technical sense, but you're actually trying to live. And we had a term in the Army which said, train like you're going to fight. And I have a term that says, train like you're going to work. Okay. And so let's replicate the work as much as I can. And let's set up a scenario in a learning environment where failure is not only an option, it's expected, because that's where you're going to learn, and it's also completely safe. You can learn, you can fail in my training room, and we haven't cost us a penny. You haven't lost your job. Your reputation's intact. Everything's good, right?
Right, right.
But we've learned from that. And so, one of the things I hand out is pencils, because I want people to use the eraser, and we're very, very deliberate about that. So I partnered with a company out of Sweden who develops and has been developing for 30-plus years tabletop business simulations, and they have I think we're up to like 14, and I'm also partnered with another company out of Toronto that has a non-competing product simulation on innovation. So since I had such a strong background, I just knew that was a good tool, and building them is a whole different skill set. And I tried to early on in the business, I tried to build my own, and talk about crashing and burning. I'm glad I never got in front of a client with it.
I could understand
because it's a whole different animal to build these things. And so I found this company out of Sweden and jumped through hoops to be able to be a U.S. partner with them, and went to Sweden and learned the program, went to Chicago where their office is, and now I have that as a service. And the one bedrock is called Apples and Oranges. It's a one-day, what we call business finance for everyone. And they literally, a lot of people equate it to Monopoly. So for on the radio, if you can think of a Monopoly, a board game,
sure.
And we actually have money like in Monopoly, and we have pieces we move around. The only difference being it's not by chance. We move the money out of the bank, and we pay the employees, and we buy materials, and we move it through there, and we collect money from our customers, and we literally see how it runs. And then at the end of the year, quotation marks, they actually sit down and do a P&L on a balance sheet. And see, everybody teaches finance backwards. They say, here's a P&L. And nobody has any reference to it because they haven't had the operations to know how the numbers got there.
Right.
So the simulation runs just opposite, like it does in real life. We run the year, and then what do? A P&L, right? So that now it makes sense to them. And it's amazing. They'll sit there and go, oh, I get it now, right? And the other thing that's amazing is in large companies when we run this, and I'm talking some really, really big companies, I've had people come in at the beginning of the day and come up next to me, literally whisper in my ear and go, I've got an MBA in marketing, and I don't know much about accounting. Am I going to look like an idiot today? And one of the things that we're really careful of is nobody looks like an idiot. Nobody. I don't care what you know or don't know. We're all learning this together, and we're all going to use the eraser. It's okay. And we're really adamant about that. And people walk out and go, oh, I learned something new. And to me, from a learning, from a pure training standpoint, it is one of the highlights of my day, because, or my week or my month, is to do that, because the amount of learning that goes on, and I'm much more of a facilitator after the first round than a true trainer. I mean, yeah, we teach them, you know, the basics of depreciation and cash flow and profit and the difference between the two and accounts receivable and blah, blah, blah. And we go through all that. And then the rest of the day is I'm kind of a guide, you know, I'm just kind of there and you're paddling the boat. And there's so much what we call discovery learning going on in peer learning. So I sit at your table, Adam, and you had a minor in accounting, but you haven't used in a long time, but stuff's coming back. So you're kind of carrying the table and I don't really know. So you're peer learning me, which is frankly a lot more powerful than me doing the teaching of the teachers.
Sure.
And then we love it because we say, you know, you've now found out in your team who kind of has some skill sets.
Right.
Utilize those tomorrow. Right. You know,
don't forget about that. Don't leave that in the room.
Yeah, leave it in the room. Call Adam and say, help me with this, or call Jack or call Ned or whatever and say, hey, you know, I got this capital budget and I don't remember that depreciation thing and how it affect. Can you help me a little bit? And one of the things we like to teach people is I want you to be able to not do your grocery list when the finance guys are in the room because you don't have a clue what they're talking about. If you can create a good argument with the finance folks, then you know enough that's now you're a valuable team player. And the finance folks are delighted if you can bring an argument to them because they go, my God, they know something. Please bring an argument to me.
I talk to all the finance folks that are upset that nobody's looking at the numbers.
And nobody, so, yeah.
Right, versus they don't know what to say or do.
Right.
As he's talking,
right.
Jack, it's... You think about your Christmas tree example.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what you talk about, the whole idea of instead of starting with a P&L and a balance sheet, let's start with the activity, right? Because people are used to doing the activity during the day, right?
Start with small amounts and relate it to the activity.
Sure.
I mean, so elementary.
Yep.
But yet very powerful.
Yep. Yep.
And you see government talking trillions of dollars.
Sure.
People don't know.
That doesn't mean anything.
No matter what happens. Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess just a quick aside. Jack had a great example. We taught a course called Cash is King. We're trying to show them how things work. So it's a fake company. We're going to sell Christmas trees, right? We talk about the idea. We're going to buy Christmas trees here in December, and we're going to sell them. And you know, whether you buy them for cash or whether you borrow money, whether you sell them for cash or have some receivable, help understand, here's all the stuff kind of works. And he's going through, and they're answering the questions, right? Because they're seeing, I can see the flow. I can follow. I can envision that Christmas tree happening here. I can envision you coming to me and say, hey, I'm good for the money. You know, I'll pay you what. Okay. People start to kind of see it. It's like, where does that go? Okay, is that on the balance sheet over here? Where does that show up on the P&L? All of a sudden, yeah, they're starting to, your point, they start to create it.
Right.
All of a sudden they go, oh, was that it?
Right? Yeah.
So it's like, I thought this thing was so complex. Right. And you're going, no. It's just, yeah, when you start to do hundreds and thousands of these things, yeah, it can get complex.
Right.
I go, but
in
and of itself. So, again, understand the flow, how things kind of work is very, very important to that.
Sure. The language of terms.
The language, yeah,
revenue,
absolutely.
And sales.
Right.
And, you know, they're looking for a different place. They don't know what's going
on. Well, yeah, and one of the things I like to point out to them is why we have four-hour mind-numbing meetings over whether this should be in a cost of goods sold or overhead. And the average employee is going, it doesn't make any difference. The net profit's the same. And the dangerous thing about that statement, it's 100% accurate. That's what makes it so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really try to get them to, it really is important because now I understand what side of the business I'm managing. And now I know that, you know, the margin means something and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's a blast. I just love it. I got to tell you, Adam, I get so excited about doing this.
We know where you're at.
Oh, my God.
I just love it.
It's just like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah,
and it's so nerdy.
Well, you're talking to the right audience here in terms of us here, as well as a lot of our listening audience that way too. Again, when you have somebody, they finally get the light bulb going off and they start to see it and the empowering thing that happens. And one of the things we have all our clients do, we have them present their P&L and their balance sheet to start with.
Right.
Let's see where they're at.
Right.
And as they present, as you know, you start to present something, you got to know it.
You can't
fake your way through it.
Right,
so
right.
They've got questions they've had for years or decades, right? And they finally I don't know. Well, so they have to ask it because they could fake their way through it before and somebody else is telling them about it, right?
Here, Ned, here's your balance sheet. You brought it over to us.
Right.
We slide it in front of you, then we shut up. Tell us what you see.
Right, right.
We've had grown men.
Oh, yeah.
Grown men could reduce the tears.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with just But what a breakthrough.
Right.
You know, they realize that they don't understand this
stuff. You don't know what you don't know.
That's the
And if you don't know what you don't know, you don't know what to teach yourself. And
that's
if, I was lucky. I was lucky. I had a company president who sat down with me every single month and every one of his directors, and we went through the P&L, the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement every single solitary month. And he was a gifted businessman and a gifted teacher. So I really luck. You talk about lucking out. I mean, that is just an opportunity I will never forget. Never.
No, it's having the right people. One of the things we encourage all of our clients to do is be very open with stuff. Be open, teach people, train them about stuff.
Right.
And people are usually not very open when it comes to the financials. And what we discovered, it wasn't that they don't want to share it as much as they are not comfortable
with
those numbers, right?
Right.
And so if I'm the proverbial man here and I'm getting up in front of my team, I don't look like an idiot. Your point about you gave the example in terms
right.
of just a training thing. Well, right. same thing. If I'm the owner of the company, if you ask me a question, I don't know the answer to it. I'm going to look like a total idiot. So
right.
guess
right.
what? I ain't putting myself in that
right.
situation.
Right.
You know, I do enough things
yeah.
to be an idiot during the course of the day. I'm not going to add that one to it. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so you have all those fears, but as they kind of get through all the stuff and things start to happen, and that's come back to the Goldman program for a second. That's one of the best things that the Goldman program, in my mind, does is it forces people to get up and present stuff. Because as an owner, you rarely have to present your company. You can fill out paperwork, do a bunch of other things. But if you get up and present and talk about stuff and you start to own it, it becomes a lot of fun. So unfortunately, the fastest hour radio and the podcast sphere is coming to a close here. It always does. It always goes very, very quickly. Ned, we appreciate you being here and being part of the show and sharing some of your story with us.
Oh, thank you.
If you want to learn more about Ned, you can check him out with Aegis 360 Consulting. We'll put some stuff in our show notes for that. And we appreciate you for joining us in this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. You can hear us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you want to get a hold of us in between, give us an email at radio@maximumvp.com. You can give us a call also at 877-849-0670. And if you missed any of today's show or any of the future or past shows, you can get them all on our website, dirtysecretsofsmallbusiness.com, or you can go to your favorite podcast playing device, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, whatever it is. Subscribe right there. It'll come right to your smart device, and leave a review. It would be fantastic. Hey, learn more Dirty Secrets of Small Business next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, here on Integrity Radio, WINT, 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com.
With black curtains near the station.